Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Sally Yates testified yesterday before the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Terrorism. She did not mince words. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn lied, she said, compromised himself with the Russians. She told the White House they did nothing until it became public, not for 18 days, by which time she was fired as acting attorney general. What happened? What does it mean? This hour on Point, Sally Yates on Russia and the White House. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you listen? What's your bottom line? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, reports of friction between President Trump and his new national security advisor, General H.R. McMaster. But first, to the hearings yesterday. Right off the bat, Sally Yates was laying out the importance of looking into interactions with Russia as she held office and looked across the White House scene. Here she was.
The efforts by a foreign adversary to interfere and undermine our democratic processes and those of our allies pose a serious threat to all Americans. This hearing and others this subcommittee has conducted and will be conducting in the future are an important bipartisan step in understanding the threat and the best ways to confront it going forward.
And then she laid it out. She said, here is what she described the Department of Justice having told the White House about General Michael Flynn.
That he had lied to the vice president and others, the American public had been misled. And then importantly, that every time this lie was repeated and the misrepresentations were getting more and more specific as they were coming out, every time that happened, it increased the compromise. And you know, to state the obvious, you don't want your national security advisor compromised with the Russians.
Let's dive into the hearings yesterday. What was learned? Joining me from Washington is Jonathan Landy, national security correspondent for Reuters. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hi there, Tom.
Also with us from Washington is Byron Tao, reporter in the Wall Street Journal's Washington Bureau, covering Congress and politics. Byron Tao, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jonathan, let's just start with you. It's hard to know, I think, for many Americans where we stand in this long process of figuring out what happened last year with the Russians and the election. And now the Flynn angle is there as well. Of course, he was involved in President Trump's campaign and then in his inner circle and then in his top security circle as national security advisor. Were there surprises from Sally Yates yesterday, or was this essentially what she's been signaling she had to say all along?
Well, we've been seeing reports that she was going to say what she said yesterday, and of course, it has a lot more significance when she says it herself on the record, under oath, before a Senate subcommittee. I think what she did beyond that was raise new questions about who knew what in the White House. And the White House has got some splaining to do now, because if you look at the chronology of what happened, where she went on January 26th to go see the White House counsel, Don McGahn, to give him the warning about General Flynn being possibly compromised with the Russians. And then you look at, the chronology. On February 14th, after all this had come out, the White House spokesman, Sean Spicer, said that Mr. McGahn had, after that meeting with Sally Yates, gone immediately to brief the president. And yet 4 days earlier, President Trump told reporters that he would look into these reports about Michael Flynn discussing the sanctions with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kiselyak. In other words, was Mr. Spicer telling the truth? Was the president briefed? He feigned no knowledge of this particular incident. And so I think those are questions that Mr. Spicer will probably get hit with today.
Byron Tao, how did this hearing fit in to the larger process, if we can still call it that, of House and Senate committee investigations into the Russia connection during the campaign season? Was this the same committee that's leading that in the Senate or different?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are a couple things happening in Congress. First of all, the Senate and House Intelligence Committees are probing Russian interference in the 2016 election with the aim of writing a pretty definitive report on what exactly happened. This was actually a hearing in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee's Subcommittee on Crime and Terrorism, headed by Lindsey Graham, who's a prominent Republican defense hawk who has also been pushing for a more aggressive and independent investigation into Russia. And two of these witnesses were scheduled to appear before a House panel last month before that hearing was canceled amid infighting between Democrats and Republicans. So it looks like Mr. Graham just went ahead and held it himself in front of his panel.
Does that mean that he didn't have confidence in the main panel to take this into account, or that it's irrelevant to the election year investigation?
Well, you know, he's spoken about it as his committee having jurisdiction over the Justice Department and the FBI and major questions of terrorism and international relations. But there certainly is some urgency coming from critics like Mr. Graham, who think that the Senate investigation and the House investigation being conducted by the Intelligence Committees is moving pretty slowly.
Let's listen to a little bit more here. This was in her testimony yesterday, talking about how she reached out to the White House, the legal counsel there, about General Flynn.
Finally, we told them that we were giving them all of this information so that they could take action, the action that they deemed appropriate. I remember that Mr. McGahn asked me whether or not General Flynn should be fired, and I told him that that really wasn't our call, that was up to them, but that we were giving them this information so that they could take action.
Did she think General Flynn should be fired? Of course, it was Sally Yates who was ultimately fired. Jonathan Landy, what about this gap, this wait? Is that just sort of the standard turning of wheels? It takes time? Or is the view that this didn't happen until this began to leak out into the public, something of which Republican senators made much of yesterday?
I think the latter. The fact is that the acting attorney general, who was the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, went to see the president's top lawyer to warn him that the national security advisor, the man who advises him on national security and defense policies, could possibly be compromised by Russia, which, as we know, had, according to our intelligence community, not only sought to influence the U.S. election, but other elections in Europe, has been challenging the United States around the world, both in Syria and other places. And the question was, why was this man who possibly had been compromised, that the Russians had the ability to blackmail, allowed to stay on in the White House for 18 more days, during which time he was privy to the most sensitive discussions and national security issues that President Trump was being briefed on and was dealing with, and that also included a meeting with the Chinese president, talks with the Chinese president in Florida, during which a response to the latest North Korea missile test was discussed. There was the president's daily brief, intelligence briefing, which is one of the most sensitive and highly classified intelligence documents produced every day by the intelligence community. There were decisions and there was a 1-hour phone call between Mr. Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin in which former General Flynn was present. There's a photograph of Trump and him and others in the other members of the inner circle in the Oval Office taking that call. And so that is really a major question. Why would a man who possibly would be compromised by the Russians allowed to have access to all of this during that 18-day period?
And let's remember, this is the president's top security advisor. Sally Yates saying yesterday that it was clear that there was – this wasn't just a hypothetical, that statements coming from Mike Pence and others were coming from what they'd learned from General Flynn, and that was problematic. Here she was.
It was clear from the vice president and others that they were repeating what General Flynn had told them and that this was a problem, because not only did we believe that the Russians knew this, but that they likely had proof of this information. And that created a compromise situation, a situation where the national security advisor essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians.
Byron Tao, how real is that? That's her presentation. What was the information that the Russians would have had that they had proof of that they could have used hypothetically to blackmail the NSC advisor?
Well, the concern here is that the Russians knew from media reports and from public statements from the vice president and the press secretary and others that Mr. Flynn was not being truthful with his superiors in the White House. And that created a situation where his very career, his credibility, and the credibility of the White House was at stake. And this is a counterintelligence or intelligence technique that Russians have long been famous for using compromising information, either subtly or overtly, to manipulate foreign government officials into doing their bidding or passing along classified information or all manner of other activities. And so this is a very real concern. And it's also a concern that the National Security Advisor is not being truthful about parts of his account with his superiors. And it's also a concern about the White House's credibility. So, essentially, you heard Sally Yates saying that she felt that she had to act here.
How did she come across yesterday, Jonathan? I mean, this was an Obama appointment. Here she was serving under President Trump. She was in the full glare and spotlight yesterday, and some pretty tough questions. We'll hear some long exchanges with Ted Cruz and Senator Cornyn. But how did she come across in the witness chair?
Professional, unflappable, and in fact, you're going to hear in that exchange with Senator Cruz how she actually dealt him as hard as he dealt her. And it was not even over the question of General Flynn, but over her response, her refusal to enforce President Trump's first immigration ban.
So that goes to her posture toward the president, perhaps. Republicans looking to show distance there. Sally Yates saying, look, I'm focused on the law and the Constitution and the national security of the United States. That was my focus. She gave testimony yesterday before the Senate. Jonathan Landay with Reuters. Please stand by there in Washington. Byron Tao with The Wall Street Journal. It's great to have both of you here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about Sally Yates in testimony yesterday before Congress and what the former acting attorney general of the United States had to say on Michael Flynn, the Trump administration, the Russians, and more. Byron Tao is with us from The Wall Street Journal. Jonathan Landay from Reuters, national security correspondent there. You can join us as well. What did you hear in the testimony of Sally Yates? Was the president right to keep Flynn on for another 18 days after Yates came to the White House to only fire him when things became public? Did Ted Cruz and other Republicans persuade you that Yates had a political agenda? Are we getting to the bottom of the Trump team's Russia connections? It's not as though Republicans aren't saying there's an issue here. You have Missouri Republican Senator Roy Blunt on the day before on NBC's Meet the Press talking about Russia getting in the middle of Western elections. This was on the day of the French vote.
The Russians couldn't be happier than have us on a Sunday when the French elections are going on, talking about how once again the Russians have figured out how to punch above their weight. This is a country that struggles economically. It's a country that resents its current role in the world, the diminished role it has now. And getting involved in these elections is one way that it can reassert itself.
Republican Senator Roy Blunt on Russia getting involved in Western elections. But, of course, at the subcommittee hearing, there were a lot of tough Republican questions for Sally Yates about her motivation, her relationship and attitude toward the president. Jonathan, Byron, lots of callers for the two of you. Mark in Appleton, Wisconsin. Mark, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to me absolutely clear that Trump would never have done anything if it hadn't become public. And it's astounding and very sad that to know that if we had a Democratic president, does anybody think that the Republicans wouldn't be howling that the president was a traitor, screaming for impeachment? I mean, it would be nonstop. And yet they're trying to act like Yates is a quote-unquote political hack and impugning her character. It's really sad. It's very sad for the country that we've become this partisan. Because clearly Flynn something went wrong. I mean, he was a great general, but something clearly got twisted.
Well, I mean, there are all kinds of questions when he was head of Defense Intelligence. We'll look at that, but on the questions about the motivations of Sally Yates, it's interesting to look at. Jonathan Byron, you referenced Ted Cruz yesterday, the interaction he had with her. Appeared to be going at her motivation, her attitude toward the president, and he, on a different issue, not Flynn, but the travel ban. Yates had refused to support that policy. That's what ultimately led to her firing. And Cruz, who's, of course, was an accomplished student of the law, got into the statutes here. Now, it sounds a little dense at the beginning because they're reading the statute about presidential authority. Underneath this, he's trying to get at what her motivations are. But it is interesting to see how clearly and strongly Sally Yates stands right up to Ted Cruz, no mean debater, comes right back pretty firmly with where she stands, where her values, what she's valuing as she was exercising her role as acting attorney general. Here's just a bit of that exchange. Yates coming back tough at Cruz.
Whenever the president finds that the entry of any alien or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may, by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem appropriate. Would you agree that that is broad statutory authorization?
I would, and I am familiar with that, and I'm also familiar with an additional provision of the INA that says, no person shall receive preference or be discriminated against in issuance of a visa because of race, nationality, or place of birth. That, I believe, was promulgated after the statute that you just quoted. And that's been part of the discussion with the courts with respect to the INA, is whether this more specific statute trumps the first one that you just described. But my concern was not an INA concern here. It rather was a constitutional concern, whether or not this the executive order here violated the Constitution, specifically with the Establishment Clause and equal protection and due process.
Byron Tao, Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz, is not someone who's accustomed to being smacked down when it comes to legal debate there, but it was kind of a smackdown yesterday.
Yeah, so that was a great moment in the hearing, and that debate goes to the heart of the debate we're having as a country over what authority the president has over immigration and whether his executive order banning travel and visas from folks from seven Muslim-majority countries violates the Constitution or existing immigration law. And you can clearly hear in that clip that Sally Yates was very well prepared, that she had thought through the position that ultimately got her fired from the Trump administration when she refused to enforce and defend that ban. And, that just goes to show that these hearings can sometimes produce moments of interesting drama and insight. And in this case, her preparation and her knowledge of the law produced a pretty good moment.
Here's another one, a long exchange, but I think it's worth it. This was the Republican Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn of Texas. And here he was pressing her on her decision to challenge President Trump's original travel ban. Remember, this is in the context of her challenging Michael Flynn and his veracity in office, maybe this again going to challenging her motivation here. But Yates pushed back hard, saying she was upholding her promise in her role here to defy the president if he asked her to do something unlawful.
I voted for your confirmation because I believe that you had a distinguished career. But I have to tell you that I find it enormously disappointing that you somehow vetoed the decision of the Office of Legal Counsel with regard to the lawfulness of the president's order and decided instead that you would countermand the executive order of the president of the United States because you happen to disagree with it as a policy matter.
Well, it wasn't.
I just have to say that.
I appreciate that, Senator. And let me make one thing clear. It was not purely as a policy matter. And in fact, I remember my confirmation hearing in an exchange that I had with you and others of your colleagues where you specifically asked me in that hearing that if the president asked me to do something that was unlawful or unconstitutional, and one of your colleagues said, or even just that would reflect poorly on the Department of Justice, would I say no? And I looked at this. I made a determination that I believed that it was unlawful. I also thought that it was inconsistent with the principles of the Department of Justice. And I said no, and that's what I promised you I would do, and that's what I did.
Wow, Jonathan Landy there again. She's just standing straight up here. Who is Sally Yates? Where's she come from? We hear that lilt of accent there. Is she a fellow Texan or John Cornyn or something else, Jonathan? Do you know?
No, I believe she comes from Georgia.
Georgia?
I believe that she joined the Justice Department there in the U.S. Attorney's Office and worked her way up to Deputy Attorney General and then took over as Acting Attorney General when President Trump was sworn into office. And it's interesting. There was clearly not all the Republican senators on the panel went after her the way that Senator Cornyn and Senator Cruz did.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I think to a lot of people seeking to try and undermine her veracity. But you had the chairman, Lindsey Graham, who quite clearly was focused on the Russia aspect. It should also point out that the other tact that other Republican senators on the panel took was to go after both her and let's not forget that the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, was also on the panel going after the two of them over leaks, over the so-called unmasking of Americans, of people associated with Trump in monitoring operations of foreign intelligence monitoring operations. So it appeared to be that this has been a tack that many Republicans have taken since all of this broke out. And there are critics who will say that they are trying to detract attention or take tension away from the main issue, which was the Russian interference using a variety of means, hacking, fake news, et cetera, in the U.S. elections.
A quick call, then I want to go to Kristen Welker of NBC at the White House. But Carol in New Orleans first. Carol, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you see, Carol?
I see Sally Yates gave a clear and concise recollection of what happened, and she was methodical. I think any young person who has aspirations of being a lawyer needs to find out where she went to law school, because she knows her constitutional law, and I think this is one of the most outstanding testimonies I've ever heard, and she hit the nail on the head. How could this so-called president of ours allow this man with compromised integrity with he's got Russian problems as well as Turkey issues, and he lets him sit on our national security meetings and high-level briefings? I mean, this is treason as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, she was clear and strong, but the word from the White House has been from the president himself is total hoax was his tweet when it comes to the Russia-Trump collusion story. Carol, I appreciate your call. Let's see what the White House is saying, thinking about all this. Kristen Welker joins us right now, White House correspondent for NBC News. Kristen, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking at the one of the tweets from the president that came out after this testimony. The Russia-Trump collusion story is a total hoax. When will this taxpayer-funded charade end? What is the White House saying about the whole Flynn business? Is the president sorry that Flynn's gone? Is he sorry that he waited to get rid of him? Does he think it was just politically did the right thing?
Look, I think they know that they're under fire. I think they want this whole Flynn story to just go away. And that's why you saw the tweet that you mentioned from the president, Tom. But there was a whole tweet storm after Sally Yates testified yesterday, effectively saying this story is a hoax. Sally Yates didn't give any new information. Here's the bottom line. This story isn't going away. And I thought one of the main headlines yesterday is that Sally Yates contradicted the way in which Sean Spicer characterized the information that she initially gave to the White House counsel. And what I mean by that is that Sean Spicer, when he was asked about this several weeks ago, said that the White House was given a heads up by Sally Yates, that maybe they should look into Mike Flynn just to see if there had been any lines crossed. Well, Sally Yates said, look, she had two meetings with the White House counsel and a phone call in which she specifically said that Mike Flynn could be blackmailed by the Russians. So that's a lot.
That's more than a heads up.
Yeah. It's a lot more than a heads up. Sean Spicer is going to brief today. We're going to ask him about this. But, Tom, I just want to pinpoint something that you just mentioned, which is the question that the White House has to answer that they have yet to answer is why it took the president 18 days to fire Mike Flynn after they had this information. We still haven't gotten a clear answer about this, and until we do, this is a story that isn't going to go away for this administration.
Does it look, Kristen, as though if it had not become public through the leaks that got so much attention yesterday, that General Flynn might still be sitting there as the National Security Advisor.
So I'm glad that you asked this question, because the last time I had the chance to ask President Trump a question in a news conference, I asked him that. I said, did you fire him because this was exposed in the media? He denies that. He has denied it publicly. He has denied it vigorously. He says he decided to fire him because ultimately he determined the extent of his lie to the vice president, to other top officials, became untenable and effectively meant that he couldn't continue to serve as the national security advisor. But I think it's a question that we need to revisit, because this underscores, again, that Sally Yates was very clear in what she said to the White House, to the administration. Now, did White House counsel Don McGahn run this up the flag immediately? How clear was he with President Trump? Those are some of the questions that we're going to need to have answered as well. But I think that is a critical question, because Mike Flynn was sitting in these meetings that were confidential. He was sitting in meetings in which they were discussing foreign policy, the future of this administration. And so that question needs to be answered.
Question for you, Kristen, from Brunswick, Maine. Jim is calling. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, my question is it possible that he knew all along that Michael Flynn was friendly with the Russians, since during his campaign he brought up this friendliness with how he wanted to get along with Putin and the Russians, and perhaps he even knew about his meetings with the Russian ambassador?
It's a great question. Based on our reporting, Mike Flynn didn't immediately divulge when he was being processed for the White House. The fact that he had all of these contacts, didn't necessarily ask permission to have these communications. At the same time, why weren't they aware? How thorough was their vetting of Mike Flynn? I tried to get to that with Sean Spicer yesterday. He said, look, the former Obama administration gave Mike Flynn his security clearance. Now, it's our understanding that you actually need an expanded security clearance to serve as national security advisor and presumably would need to answer some of those very questions. One more point I'll make, though. The president has not yet completely distanced himself from Mike Flynn. Again, he continues to paint this as a hoax, and this is a part of, you know, the fake news, but he has yet to say, you know, Mike Flynn is the one who really messed up here, and it will be interesting to see if in the coming days he in fact does that, if he realizes that politically this is just untenable for him to stand by Mike Flynn in any way, shape, or form.
Jonathan Landy, you cover national security for Reuters. Is it clear to you that Flynn was acting here as a solo actor when he talked with the Russian ambassador, let's say, when sanctions were raised? I mean, our caller is asking, well, what if this was in effect a kind of outreach from the Trump administration, from the president, via the man who would be his national security advisor? Do we know one way or the other, Jonathan?
We don't, but that is a major question, because it wasn't just Mike Flynn who met with or spoke with the Russian ambassador. We know that there was a meeting between the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and the Russian ambassador. And we also know that Jared Kushner met in New York with the head of the VEB Bank. It's a Russian bank that American intelligence officials consider to be a front for the Russian intelligence service, the FSB. The bank is under U.S. sanctions. And not only that, but the chairman, the man with whom Mr. Kushner met, is a former Russian intelligence officer himself, who was posted to that position by President Putin. One more point. The VEB Bank has been implicated in a U.S. espionage operation. One of its top officials in New York was prosecuted as an illegal, what the Russians call an illegal, which is a undercover intelligence officer, and was sentenced to 30 months in prison, I believe, and was just recently released and allowed to go back to Russia. So there's a lot of these questions about surrounding this. But one of the main questions is, given all of this, what did President Trump know, and when did he know it?
Kristen Welker, we just got you for another few seconds. Does the White House think it's winning here, sort of sandbagging, ridiculing, calling all this attention a hoax, the questions a hoax? Do they think they're slowly winning?
I think they believe this is a problem. and they've got to turn the page. And so I think that's why you're seeing them vigorously push back and punch back in every way, shape, and form, and to try to frankly turn the page, to focus on things like healthcare, to paint that as a huge victory. Obviously, last week, the Republican healthcare plan passed the House but has a long way to go. There was a lot of focus, obviously, on that victory. They want to be talking about the president's upcoming trip when he travels to various foreign places and attends the NATO summit. So their attempt is to punch back and to try to turn the page. Are they winning? I think they realize they're in the midst of a tough effort to do that.
Kristen, we're up against it right here. Very grateful to you for joining us today. Kristen Welker, White House correspondent for NBC News. Jonathan Lande, Byron Tao, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Sally Yates' testimony yesterday before the U.S. Senate, the subcommittee on crime and terrorism of the Judiciary Subcommittee. Byron Tao is with us from The Wall Street Journal covering Congress. Jonathan Lande is here, national security correspondent for Reuters. You can join us. Are we getting to the bottom of the Trump team's Russia connections, whatever they may be? Do the answers matter to you? And who's going to get the whole story out there so we can be done with this or prepared to deal with it more effectively the next time? Before this hour is over, we will look at new tensions being reported between the president and his new national security advisor, General H.R. McMaster. But we're looking at the testimony yesterday. It wasn't just Sally Yates. James Clapper was there. He was the former director of national intelligence. He said Russia tried to influence the outcome of the 2016 election in favor of President Trump.
The intelligence community assessment concluded first that President Putin directed an influence campaign to erode the faith and confidence of the American people in our presidential election process. Second, that he did so to demean Secretary Clinton. And third, that he sought to advantage Mr. Trump.
Okay, there we are. Here we stand. Lisa in Savannah, Georgia. Lisa, what do you see?
Hi, Tom. First, I want to say that here in Georgia, we would really love to have Sally Yates run for governor. She would be just phenomenal. But my question is that there's more and more obvious evidence about these types of problems with the Trump administration and Russia. And there's been calls for nonpartisan investigations, which keeps getting shot down. At what point do normal American people say enough is enough? We want an investigation to get to the bottom of this.
Byron, there are investigations formally going on in the House and in the Senate for average American citizens, you know, wondering about, worrying about maybe whether this is going to be really fully explored and definitively settled. Where should they look?
Well, that's a great question. So the fact that there are two independent and overlapping investigations is going to be a little bit of a problem. They're operating on their own timeline. There are different characters involved. It's a different body of each house of Congress that's doing this. And on top of that, the FBI is conducting its own investigation into alleged collusion or whether there was any collusion between Trump campaign officials or associates of Mr. Trump and Russia. So there are a couple of threads going on right now, and it's unclear when any of these will be resolved. At some point, the question you have to ask yourself is, when will congressional leaders decide that the constant drumbeat of news coming out of these investigations is interfering in their ability to get legislative business done and just toss this to a sort of 9/11-style independent commission or a Watergate independent-style congressional committee that can get to the bottom of this? And I don't think we know the answer to it, but it certainly remains a possibility, even as congressional leaders have been kind of skeptical about it.
Be good to have it settled. I mean, we've got other things to pay attention to. On the other hand, if this just fizzles out, and the next thing you know, it's 2020, And we've got this going on all over again. And American confidence in the integrity of their election process is continuing to be eroded. Well, then you've got a problem. Jerry in Gulfport, Mississippi. Jerry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say that I think all the investigations are good, but we seem to be missing a point here, that we do all these investigations into everything. Now we investigate the Trump administration. We need to know when the past administration knew what, who knew what, and why are we now being told it? They were in power, and according to the information, they knew even before the current president took office that this had happened. He was not briefed properly, we can tell, because Sally Yates' testimony is not enough to clear the air that the president, the current president, knew what was going on. Telling him that his national security advisor may be compromised, maybe, not that he is. Where is the evidence? May is all it is, maybe. And 18 days later, he fires him, yes. But we need to know what the Democratic Party knew. What did Sally Yates know when? What did President Obama knew and when?
Yeah, Jerry, we've got it. I don't think it was so conditional as May. I mean, they said he was in a compromised circumstance. That she was quite definitive on yesterday. But Jonathan looked back. What about the Obama administration's role in this? Can they answer the questions? Is there evidence that they knew but weren't forthcoming? If so, why? Because the president didn't want to be seen as interfering?
Well, first of all, she was pretty categorical.
Yeah.
That Flynn had lied to the vice president, to other members of the senior administration staff. She was categorical about that. She was categorical that he could be blackmailed by the Russians. We do know that the FBI began its counterintelligence investigation in July. We've had that on the record from the director of the FBI, Mr. Comey. We do know that this was a matter that was brought to President Obama and his national security staff and others, that they did look at this. I believe it was in August the first time, but they were deeply concerned that saying anything about the question of whether or not the Trump campaign had any kind of connections or whether there was any collusion or the possibility of collusion with the Russians could influenced the election, and then they decided to remain silent. But eventually, in December, we know that on December 28th, actually, finally, President Obama imposed sanctions on Russia for its interference in the election. He threw out more than 30 suspected or Russian intelligence officers. And I've been told that that decision was really prompted. What finally was the final nail in all of this for the president and for his national security advisor, Susan Rice, was the fact that President Trump, President-elect Trump, was harshly criticizing the U.S. intelligence community. Let's not forget, he accused them of being Nazis, and that was a final straw that finally got them to move on this.
One more quick call. David in Bradenton, Florida. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Finally, a breath of fresh air from Washington. Somebody with a good moral compass and willing to stand as an individual to anybody there. The rest of the people in Washington seem like sheep.
You're talking about Sally together. Yates yesterday, David? You're talking about Yates?
That's correct. Yeah, Sally Yates. Clapper did well as well, but Sally Yates is a role model for many of us.
David, I appreciate your call. Byron Tao, what's your sense of where this goes? You have a critical mass here headed toward busting this open or fizzling out over time?
Well, the sources that I've talked to on Capitol Hill warn that this could be an 18 to 24-month process. So I would not count on any answers being definitive or definitively delivered anytime soon. This could go on for a very long time. These are complicated, very difficult intelligence problems. These are situations that involve tons of witnesses, and this could go on for quite a while.
Well, a moment of clarity yesterday. Clearly, people in that hall interpreting it in different ways. The country will listen and decide. I want to thank the two of you for being with us this hour. Just terrific to have you. Byron Tao with the Wall Street Journal covering Congress and politics there. Byron, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Jonathan Lande, national security correspondent for Reuters, also with us from Washington. Jonathan, thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
In a moment, the reported friction between President Trump and his current national security advisor, General H.R. McMaster. This is On Point. So after all that, Michael Flynn is out and General H.R. McMaster is in as national security advisor. President Trump said Sunday he could not be happier with his new advisor. He's doing a terrific job, he said. But that is not what Bloomberg columnist Eli Lake is hearing on the president's thinking. From screaming phone calls to denying McMaster's staff appointments, it looks like Trump may have major buyer's remorse with his famously tough-minded general. Joining me now from Washington is Bloomberg View columnist Eli Lake. Eli, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
The formal word out of the White House is that the president is very happy with his head of national security. What are you hearing?
Well, I have been reporting and hearing things for about a month now about the friction between Trump and H.R. McMaster, and that some of this is stylistic in that H.R. McMaster is, you know, brilliant strategic and defense policy thinker, and sometimes has a habit of lecturing Donald Trump, who likes to interrupt briefings and ask pointed questions, and will also sometimes present a lot of options, and that interpersonal relationship is not good. He's not good at reading the principle, as they say in Washington. But there are also some substantive issues. Steve Bannon, the senior strategist for the White House, and the faction of the White House that's loyal to him, is very concerned that McMaster wants to basically commit the U.S. to more nation building in Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq, and other places in the big war, and that Trump in many ways campaigned against those sorts of things with his famous America First slogan. And finally, there's an issue of personnel, and you touched on that. But, for example, McMaster has wanted to bring in General Waddell, who to be his deputy, someone he knew in his tours of Iraq, and Rentz Priebus has blocked that because he did not clear it with, you know, other senior White House officials, and McMaster sort of says, I'm in charge of hiring and firing. And earlier there was an incident where a list of names of Obama holdovers at the National Security Council who were suspected of leaking, that very much Trump and Bannon and others wanted McMaster to fire, and McMaster refused, basically saying, I'm in charge of my own ship, and, you know, I will make these decisions myself. And I think that that's another source of friction.
You write about a moment in which the president was reportedly livid over McMaster communicating with South Korea, his South Korean counterpart. What was that about?
Well, if you remember, in one of the interviews, President Trump had said that he expected the South Koreans to pay for a missile defense system known as THAAD. And in a phone call to the National Security Advisor for the South Koreans, McMaster assured that, no, the policy has not changed. We will continue to pay for that system. And when Trump read about this in the Wall Street Journal, he, according to my sources, screamed at McMaster on a phone call. And there were other people who were kind of in earshot of that on the speaker, you know, including his staff. And that's sort of dressing him down in front of McMaster's staff is a way of emasculating him.
You write about him complaining in briefings in front of the National Security Advisor about the general undermining my policy.
That's right. And I think sometimes Trump does have a tendency to be sharp in private and to sort of treat his senior advisors and play them off of each other. And he certainly does that. And it wouldn't surprise me because, you know, the president is fairly mercurial in if he suddenly loves him. And he gave me the statement for my column saying that he absolutely was very happy with him and, you know, couldn't be happier. And, you know, he's doing a terrific job. But, you know, I think that at the same time, there is really a tension there in the sense that, you know, it goes back a little bit to McMaster's own great academic work, which he wrote about the Vietnam War, and his big critique was that he believed that the generals at the time should not have let the American presidents continue to escalate in an endless war there. And, you know, in that sense, there's a sense that McMaster believes that, you know, the military leadership has an obligation in some ways to push back against the political leadership, whereas I think Trump says, you know, I'm the boss, don't undermine me. You don't manage me. I manage you. And that, I think, has created, according to many of my sources, I've been, as I said, reporting this for a month, a real tense dynamic between the two.
Is the general effectively sidelined at this point? The president met over the weekend with Australia's prime minister. Australia, a very important strategic ally in the Pacific, especially these days with the tensions in North Korea, China. But what was McMaster there?
No, he was not. It was the outgoing Deputy National Security Advisor, K.T. McFarland, who was brought in with Mike Flynn, who we were talking about in the earlier segment. I would say it's too soon to say that McMaster is sidelined. Today, he's briefing the president on an important new Afghanistan war plan. He has briefed the president, I think, on Monday with regards to new policies, in terms of Syria and our support for the Kurdish fighters there. So it's too soon to say that McMaster is sidelined. He still has access to the president, but there have been times when the president declined to have McMaster brief him before press interviews. And I've heard other examples of when, you know, there have been meetings in the inner circle and McMaster hasn't been there. But that's not necessarily unusual. I think it's too soon, though, to say that he is sidelined. But it's well known within the National Security Cabinet and the government, you know, at the highest levels, that, you know, McMaster and Trump have this tension. And, you know, I think there were a lot of reporters who were kind of picking up pieces of it, and I was happy to be the first one out with it.
The Trump people gave you a statement saying he couldn't be happier with the general, and you remind us, though, that Kellyanne Conway has said the same thing about Flynn only a few hours before he was forced to resign. General McMaster is a very particular figure in Washington. What would it signal if he ultimately fell out with this president, or this president washed his hands of him? What would that signal, Eli?
I think that Trump has been able to purchase a lot of legitimacy for his foreign policy, in no small part because of H.R. McMaster, but also, I think James Mattis contributes to that, Mike Pompeo at CIA, Rex Tillerson at the State Department. All of these are seen as pretty seasoned and establishment figures. McMaster, I do think, brings this level of legitimacy to the Trump foreign policy. If he was to be, let go, I think that there would be a bit of a political problem if he was not replaced with another similar kind of establishment figure, if that makes any sense. So in that respect, I do think that there is a sense that, you can't just keep going through national security advisors. They're extremely important for making sure the process of, the most important job of a president is going to be running smoothly. And on that point, which is just sort of the issues of strategy and making the trains run on time inside the government and getting the right people involved in policymaking, McMaster's critics even say he's done a very good job. It's this, the interpersonal relationship with Trump, and it's a perception, I think, from Trump that McMaster is somehow managing him, which, has caused this friction.
Fascinating. Fascinating. We will watch. We appreciate your reporting, Eli Lake, columnist at Bloomberg View. Eli, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
On Point is produced by a whole lot of terrific producers. To bring it to you every day, Nick Anderson, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Maeve Pagès, Sarah Platt, Allison Poley, Tanya Raleigh, James Ross, with help from Calvin Henry, Grace Seegers, Michael DeSocio, and Gretchen Voss. Our executive producer here is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.